ACC quarterback rankings 2026. Where do the Seminoles fall on this list? And is Ashton Daniels being disrespected? Also, we have some ACC order of finish odds that we're going to talk about today and some FSU fan questions that we're going to take a stab at. Of course, we're going to close with baseball talk as well. Man, we got a fully loaded episode for you guys. So what is up, No Nation? It's the guys from Plant the Spear. I'm Jesse. That's Michael. And Michael, we got from top to bottom. There's not a lot of news going on today, but we have managed to dig deep and find some things to talk about both for football and baseball. But before we jump into that, man, it's going to be a fun episode. But how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great, Jesse. It's like the old Wild West with the tumbleweeds just kind of yeah. tumbling across. Yeah. Just trying to... It's slim pickings out there with FSU sports right now, at least from the football side. Obviously, yeah. we got baseball to talk about, but from the football side, we're grasping for straws, as they would say.
Yeah, it's been tough, man, because not only is camp closed, there's mm-hmm. a little bit of lack of excitement and news flow and stuff like that, too. And, you know, last year we had some things I felt like that got leaked. This year it's been pretty tough. I mean, just kind of looking through some of the credential boards and things like that, It is the wild, dusty west right now. So, but, you know, like we said, man, we have dug up some topics that we think are going to be fun to talk about today that are relevant to the upcoming season that you guys will enjoy. You know, with it being so quiet, man, I've just been really keeping my head buried in the sand, working on all these cool new updates that we're going to bring you guys to the website. We got a lot of other things that are going to be rolling out, some new features and things that I can't tell you about right yet, but I promise you they're going to be worth the wait. Hopefully we have those rolled out by early summer. So make sure you lock in with us. We got some exciting stuff coming. But Michael, let's just jump right in and let's start first with the ACC quarterback rankings, because I mean, man, this list was put out by CBS. Let me say that first. We're going to be kind of reacting and sharing our thoughts to a list that was already put out. This is not necessarily our list, but we're going to go through it and give our thoughts. And we're going to talk about the competition. We're going to talk about where Florida State stands, some of the larger messages that it sends about maybe where we're at as a program right now. And so that's what we're going to work with, is starting with this list. And, you know, man, this is an important list because obviously quarterback drives so much of the success of your team. And we're going to talk about that when we get into the number one quarterback, a guy that, you know, led his school to their first ACC title in 40 right. years. And so it's one of those where this is going to be a big part of how your season looks on the field.
Right.
Now, we already know Florida State said they were not trying to get into expensive quarterback waters. And so that's probably why you're going to see them fall where they fall on the list. But, man, overall, when we get through these, obviously these are preseason rankings. Based on what people did last year, it probably had most of these a different school. So right. you can't necessarily hang your hat on these, that this is exactly how the quarterback pecking order is going to turn out next year.
Right.
But a lot of this is based on real data that shows you kind of where the numbers, where the guys at the position stand up, stack up in the ACC. And sometimes the results on the field will actually follow that. So it's an right. interesting subject to talk about. We've got some other takeaways out of it. But, yeah, man, the quarterback list is always an important one.
Yeah, absolutely, because it just shows where whoever put the list together thinks your quarterback rates as far as, you know, how well they will perform based on what they performed off last year. Now, the interesting about this list is it's not just based on the quality of the quarterback. It's also based on the quality of that quarterback's previous team, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. So, and thirdly, it's also based off of what they project your quarterback to be this year as well, too. So when we look at this list, you're going to see these quarterbacks are going to be ranked, you know, one to whatever it is. But it's based off of, one, how they do last year. Two, the quality of what they did last year. Three, where they project this year as well, too.
Yeah, and part of that has to do with the other pieces around you and what Correct. You have to work with. And that does make a big difference in this. And the one thing I want to say before we jump into the list is, just because you have a quarterback that's high on this list doesn't mean you're going to win a ton of games, right?
Right.
A quarterback can only do so much. But it is important because as we start with this list, the number one on there, of course, as most of you could guess, is going to be right. Darian Mensah at Miami. Had they not had Cam Ward 2 years ago, that's probably a 5 or 6 win team at best. So it does make a big difference. So, man, let's just jump right into this list. And number one is Darian Mensah, of course, from Miami. I mean, this is a guy that produced at Tulane. He produced at Duke. Now he's at Miami. Last year, 3,900 passing yards, 34 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, had a 66%, almost 67% completion percentage, which was on par with what he did at Tulane. So you can pretty much pencil in that that's just who that guy is, right? He's just a really good quarterback. And unfortunately, you now put him at a program that gives him even more weapons to work with. He brought the 1,000-yard receiver from Duke. He also has Malachi Toney there. The biggest question, I think, for Miami at their quarterback, because for me, when we go through this list, it's hard for me to argue that he's the number one quarterback in the ACC right now. I just really can't argue against that.
Right.
Especially when you take into account the weapons that he has. The biggest concern really for Miami is they're losing some pieces on their offensive line. And as it was with the last 3 years, when you basically put all your chips in the portal pot, if anything happens to him, I can't even tell you their backup.
I don't even know their name.
I'm pretty sure the last couple of guys had to have transferred out. And so that, to me, Miami is going to have to bank on this guy being healthy and available all season behind an offensive line that's replacing a few pieces. But, you know, again, man, you're talking about a guy that threw for a ton of yards, had great stats at Tulane, great stats at Duke, and led them to a football ACC title. I can't argue with him being at number one, especially with the pieces he's got to work with down there in Moral Gables.
Yeah, absolutely. Their backup quarterback is a guy named Judd Anderson and Luke Nickel and Daron Coleman.
It's not the ones that I've known of. So all the other ones must have Puffenberger left. All the other guys left. So yeah, I mean,
but that's what it is. That's what Miami has basically said. We're going to go and get the best QB in the portal every year. We have the money to do it. This is the third year straight they're doing it. That's what they're going to do. And they've found great success, starting with Cam Ward, right? Took that, like you said, probably a 5-win team to a 10-win team. Then you got Carson Beck. Took that team and went to the national championship game. Now they got Darren Mensah. And hear me out. I don't think Darren Mensah is a bad quarterback. I think he's really good. Obviously, he had success at Duke. He had success at Tulane. Now, everybody wants to point out, well, yeah, he led Duke to the ACC championship game. Let's make something very clear. He didn't lead Duke to the ACC championship game. The ACC tie-breaking scenarios led Duke to the ACC championship game. Now, he won the game, so we got to give him credit for that. They end up winning that game, but he didn't lead Duke there. The ACC tie-breaking scenario led Duke there. But I do think he's a really good quarterback. He's mobile. He's got a good arm. He's cerebral when he wants to be. I remember watching him play Clemson last year. I think that game was at Death Valley, if I remember correctly. And you can correct me on that. But I think that was at Death Valley, and I thought he played phenomenal in that game. He is, by large, he's got a stacked, you know, wide receiver group there. Obviously, the offensive line is going to be, you know, an issue to see where they were with Miami there. But again, they're going to be probably a top 10 coming into preseason. He puts them in that category there. And Miami, again, is going to be the odds on favor to win the ACC championship again with him at the helm.
Yeah. And when we'll get into that later, when we talk about the championship game odds, it's a pretty wide spread between Miami and everybody else right now. And so a lot of that, again, you know, you think back to last year, that was a team, and this is not the Plant the Ibis podcast. We're going to move on from him in a second. But you think about last year, where really their big limiting factor was kind of the offense. They wanted to win in a rock fight. And now they actually kind of have an offense where if they pair it with a defense like they had last year, now you got a lot to replace on that defense. Two really important pieces. Now you have the offense that can keep up. And so it really does kind of make Miami dangerous. But, you know, when you spend $10 million on a quarterback in the portal, you should be, you know. Right. And so moving on to the number two quarterback on their list. And again, this is another one that's frankly hard to argue with where he's at on this list. And that is CJ Bailey at NC State. Now, you played him last year. It's a guy that was a stud out of Florida at Chaminade Madonna. Same as school as Jeremiah Smith there. He threw for 3,100 yards last year, 25 touchdowns. Had another 6 rushing touchdowns, but 9 picks. He's got the big kind of NFL frame already of a quarterback, a prototypical NFL quarterback. Now, he did throw 6 of his 9 interceptions in 2 games, but, you know, the thing when I come back, I think when I talked early in this about how a quarterback doesn't always equal wins, CJ Bailey's got to be the prime example, because he is – for all intents and purposes, that this list we're going to go through right now, there's nothing that says he's not the second best quarterback in the ACC.
Right.
But as we know, NC State is a perennial 7-8 win team that never wins more than 9 games other than one time in their entire program history. So he's a really good quarterback, but for some reason, it just never really turns into wins against NC State. Now, you did lose to him last year, and you are going to face him again this year, but man, it's hard to argue with CJ Bailey at number two.
Yeah, I mean, he's, like you said, he is the definition of, if you want to make a great argument that quarterbacks don't win games, you put up CJ Bailey's picture. I mean, he went 18 for 25 for 152 yards, I believe, and 2 touchdowns, 8 carries, 2 yards against Florida State in that just terrible game in Raleigh last year that we were at. We got beer threw on us. It was great. And but they won that game because of some doinked punts, right? Yep. And under Dave Doran, they're just a team that just does not win more than 9 games. They're consistently 7-8, and on a really good season, 9-win team. And so as long as Dave Doran is there, that's what they're going to be. And you have this really great quarterback who is, if he could just get in the right system and the right coach, I bet he could be even better than he is. But that's what he's going to be. He's always a risk to run. He's really good in the intermediate games. Not very great deep passer, but he always keeps his team together. He keeps his team in the game. There's a couple games they got blown out on, but other than that, I remember the game against Virginia, where he showed up. I mean, gosh, what a game. So, yeah, I think definitely he sits well at that 2 spot there.
Yeah, he was actually one of the ones where there was rumors that he was flirting with the portal. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that he would have came to Florida State for what our budget was. But when there were rumors he was going to hit the portal, I was like, this is the number one guy I would like to see you go grab. But he ended up staying at NC State, so you end up facing him in Tallahassee this year. Now, number 3 on the list is another quarterback that you're going to be fortunate enough to play this year, and that's Kevin Jennings at SMU. Now, I know he had a little bit of up-and-down tenure early on. He is a SMU through-and-through guy. He's not a transfer. He's straight from the program, which is rare these days.
Right.
But in 2025, he threw for over 3,600 yards, 26 pass touchdowns, 4 rushing touchdowns. He does have an interception problem with 13 interceptions, but he had a good 66% completion percentage. He did lead them to upset number 10 Miami at the time with a 365-yard game. He led SMU to the ACC title game in 2024. Now, he had a terrible title game when he got there. But, you know, the biggest thing for him, man, is like that touchdown to interception ratio is still a problem for him. He's still heavy on the interceptions. But, you know, this is a guy that started multiple years for them now. I think this is going to be his 3rd year as the full-time starter. And he's, you know, you just look down the list of guys who have proven that they can do it. And right now, I don't see one that belongs higher than Kevin Jennings on the list. Do I think he's a stellar quarterback? Not particularly, but he does have the mobile aspect too, which makes him a little bit dangerous there. That he's one of the first ones on this list that has that real mobile ability. Yep. And you're going to see him in Doak Campbell Stadium. So far, you get 1 through 3, and number 3 is not too bad either.
Yeah, well, remember, number 3 lit you up down back in Dallas in 2024.
Yeah.
You remember that game. And so he's a decent quarterback. He's definitely, you know, yeah, I think 3 is probably a good spot for him in the ACC.
I think really when you look at this list, and as we go through it, guys, we're going to speed up for the ones that Florida State is not really relevant that we're not playing. I think what you see on this list is you'll see as we get through this, you have the top 3. Right. Who are pretty clear defined returning starter level, really high level guys. And then I think it speaks to about 4 through kind of around 12-ish or so, 10-ish or so. It's just kind of a muddied mess of just, we don't know. It's looked good, but we don't know what it's going to be. And so I think that's the clear separation there. Because now you move to some guys that have shown it, but maybe not on a consistent basis. Number 4 is Cal's quarterback. There is no possible way. This kid is good. I'm not good at pronouncing names. So I'm just going to go with Cal's quarterback. He is a Samoan kid who has a crazy hard name to pronounce. But man, I mean, he was really, really good. 4-star, one of the better recruits that Cal has gotten at quarterback. And so last year threw for over 3,400 yards and 18 touchdowns as a true freshman, started all 13 games for them. First or only the 2nd true freshman to start for Cal since Jared Goff. So he had a pretty bad QBR at 58.5, but again, he was a true freshman, so he comes in at number 4. Number 5 is Mason Heinstuhl, from Pitt. You saw him last year, lit you up as a freshman in his first road start. Unfortunately, you know, this is a three-star guy that Pitt was his only Power Four offer, and he stayed and he won the job, and he's been doing pretty good. 2025, he had 2,300 plus yards, 16 touchdowns. In nine games as a true freshman starter, he threw for a school record 423 yards against NC State. You know, I mean, he's just – he came in and he really lit that Pitt offense on fire. But then he did hit a little bit of a wall.
Yeah, he had his
play. 1-3 in the final four starts, and offensive line gave up 18 sacks in those games. Average dropped around 200 yards a game. So he fell off a little bit. I think the question is with, like, the Cal kid is, are you going to hit the sophomore slump or are you going to take a sophomore jump? Typically in year two, you're going to get better, but now everyone knows who you are. You're not the underrated kid anymore. But again, you're going to have to face this guy too. And so now that's four out of the top five on this list that you have to play this year from ACC quarterback rankings.
Yeah, absolutely. The Cal quarterback, Jerome Kiwi Sagapalutili.
I hope you said that right. I might have to bleep that last one out.
Brother, this is a family-friendly show. Yeah. Calm down here. No, so for Mason High School, this is the kid that I was – when Gus Malzahn resigned and I was thinking, okay, are they going to hire a offensive coordinator? Mm-hmm. I thought, man, they needed to go after Cade Bell.
Yep.
One, because I like Cade Bell. I think his offense are innovative. Two, because I thought then he would bring this kid with him.
Yeah.
And he would be our start – or at least vying for our starting quarterback, but probably have the leg up. I really like this kid when I watch him. When he played in Doak Campbell Stadium, he played fearless. He played like he was a senior in college. I mean, the dude can – he can run. He can throw intermediate, deep throws. He had – he was cerebral in a lot of his processing. Yes, he did fall off at the end of the year as freshman as they played more stiffer competition towards the end of the year as well too. But I really like this kid. I think he should be probably a little bit higher. I think he should be above the Cal quarterback, but – this Mason Highstone is a good kid. We'll see how he does this year.
Yeah, and we'll fly through the next two because we don't play them. Ethan Grunkermeyer from at Virginia Tech followed James Franklin from Penn State, former four-star. He did play some last year, 1,300 roughly yards, eight touchdowns, four interceptions. Just don't really know what he's going to be. Took over for injured Drew Allar, starting there for James Franklin at Virginia Tech. But, you know, again, man, that's a program that you just can't – you just don't know what they're going to be this year. I mean, they should take a jump, but we don't play him at least, so we'll get to kind of watch from the sideline how that whole James Franklin experiment goes there. But that's not a guy with a lot of experience who's played a whole lot, and he's not a runner at all, and yet he's already at number six on the list. Now, that may be a bump from his recruiting ranking and just being with James Franklin, but then you look at number seven, which is a really interesting number here for Steve Angeli at Syracuse. Like, this dude – was lighting people up before he got hurt. I mean, Syracuse was on a run. He transferred in from Notre Dame, had 1,317 yards, 10 touchdowns, two picks in just four games before he tore his Achilles. I mean, he was the leading passer in the nation after three games and lighting people up. But then he gets hurt, and Syracuse goes on an eight-game losing streak. Now, he will be back this year, so good for Syracuse. Maybe not good for everyone playing Syracuse because the kid was lighting it up. So, man, we'll just kind of keep an eye on how that one goes too. But I think as we go down here, you know, the ones that we're just naming the quick thoughts on, we just want to paint a picture of where everybody's at because Ashton Daniels, as you can tell, we have not mentioned his name yet. Number eight, Louisville Lincoln Kineholtz. Now, this is the four-star recruit, came over from Ohio State. He was the number one player in South Dakota ever, and he chose Ohio State over a bunch of big-name Big Ten teams there. Now, he didn't do a whole lot at Ohio State because he was just a backup. He got beat out by Julian Sayin. But I think really what they're going off of is two things here. This Kineholtz kid obviously has a lot of pedigree coming out of high school, being an Ohio State transfer, and also Jeff Brohm's history with quarterbacks. Now, I know they didn't do too well last year with the USC transfer there, but he's had a really good history with quarterbacks. And so we'll see how this one plays out. And this is one that's on your schedule. So this is a guy that not a whole lot of experience, but there's a lot of potential mixed with a good offensive-minded coach. And so I can understand the eighth on the list from an unproven but a lot of potential standpoint.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying that he ain't no Miller Moss. See how I did the like?
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Anyways, yeah. Yeah, he's a, you know, he's come from Ohio State. He's got the pedigree. You know, I'll tell you, we got a quarterback from Ohio State. Well, that was committed to Ohio State, and he turned out to not really be very great as well. So we'll see what what Jeff Brohm can do with him. But he's really an unknown until we see him get on the field.
Yeah, and I think the same thing goes for number nine, another guy that you're going to play, and that's Christopher Vizina. I hope I said that right. From Vizina. Clemson. I think it's close to that. V-I-Z-Z-I-N-A. Vizina. I think I'm pretty close on that.
Yeah.
Now, this is another kid that's pretty much a pure hype play. I mean, he's a five-star out of Alabama in the 23 class, and then not from Alabama, out of the state of Alabama. Let me clarify that. He has a high school commit to Clemson, never transferred. He did throw for 406 yards, four touchdowns and a pick in five games last year. He only started one versus SMU, which they did lose that game, I believe, pretty badly.
Yep.
Now, again, man, he did throw three touchdowns in his starting debut, first Clemson quarterback to do that since Deshaun Watson. You know, he got a little bit of game experience last year with Cade Klubnik being out a little bit with some injury there. But, you know, this is another one where new offensive coordinator, a new quarterback for Clemson, and a guy who's never really – he's got one start under his belt. So there's going to be a lot of question marks there. So, you know, again, I think eight and nine are, like we talked about, are grouped together based on – there's a lot of pedigree but not a lot of proven production there. But if things hit, they could be really good. We just haven't seen it yet. And so I can understand where you're getting the guys who have produced to the guys who have the potential but haven't produced, and then we're going to keep moving on down the list. But number nine is about the same as Louisville's situation at number eight.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like the NCAA basketball tournament. Eight and nine, you can almost interchange them. It's really just about what school they're at right now. But, yeah, we don't have very much information outside of the little bit that he's done. Obviously, he's probably getting the hype over some of the other quarterbacks because he's at Clemson.
Yeah, and then when you get to number 10, you know, man, all I hope is this guy doesn't turn out to be Chandler Morris 2.0 at Virginia. And that's Bo Perbula, three-star Penn State to Missouri, to Virginia. So this guy's been around the globe a little bit. He has 1 year left. Last year, he threw for a little over 1,900 yards, 11 touchdowns, nine picks, had almost 300 rushing yards and six touchdowns. He led Missouri to a 6-1 start before he got an ankle injury. The dual threat, again, is what makes me nervous because that's really what killed you with Chandler Morris last year, a guy who has tried multiple times to get his eligibility, extra year of eligibility. Doesn't seem like that's going to be the case. So it is going to be Bo Perbula for the Cavaliers next year, and you're going to get them at your own place. Now, you know, Chandler Morris threw a couple picks against you last year, but he was a big part of the reason that that team went 11-3 and played in the ACC championship game last year. Will Perbula be to that level? Man, it's hard to say because, I mean, you saw the potential from what he did at Missouri, especially lead him to a 6-1 start. But, I mean, when you go back and you watch Chandler Morris and the way he played last year, that kid was an absolute stud for Virginia. So, it seems like they're not going to take a big down step or a step back at the quarterback position, but there is still some unknown as to what he's going to do and the tools that he has around him.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what he does there. I mean, you know, hopefully it's not another Chandler Morris situation. Obviously, I don't think Virginia has the same kind of money they had last year to kind of have that roster clicking. Well, it wasn't just Chandler Morris, though he did a lot. I mean, they had a pretty decent roster this year. I don't think they had the same kind of roster acquisitions they had this year. So we'll see. Obviously, they come to your home. You're 9-1 all time against them. Hopefully you get to 10-1.
Yeah, and that's in Duke. Because we don't want to talk about the record in Charlottesville.
Exactly.
but so the next one on the list here, as we get deeper down, you know, 1-10, I think I don't really have a whole lot of argument with where they're at, right? Maybe Perbula could be higher up the list a little bit because he has proven a little bit more than the one at Louisville and Clemson has. Now is where we get, and Ashton Daniels is coming, and the CBS writer that put this together did assume that Ashton Daniels was going to win this job, right? And we'll talk about that versus Kevin Sperry in just a second. This is the first one where I think I might put Ashton Daniels ahead of him, and that is number 11, Gio Lopez at Wake Forest. Now, he transferred from South Alabama, where he was pretty good, to UNC, where he didn't really do a whole lot of anything there. They were terrible on offense last year. Now he's at Wake Forest. Last year, he put up 1,747 yards, 10 touchdowns, 5 picks, and 11 starts. They were literally the worst offense in the ACC last year. To me, I don't put him above Ashton Daniels. This is the first one that I have a disagreement on the CBS list. And to me, if you're going with maybe the fact of, okay, Ashton Daniels has more experience than he does, maybe he looked better at South Alabama than Ashton Daniels did at Stanford. But you're also talking about a guy in Ashton Daniels that probably has better weapons around him than Wake Forest does. And so to me, from that alone and the running ability, and we'll get into Ashton Daniels next, I would probably move Ashton Daniels up above Gio Lopez at number 11 here. But you're not going to face Gio Lopez this year. I kind of wish you did there at Wake Forest. Just didn't do a whole lot at UNC last year. So this is the first one that I have a disagreement with where Ashton Daniels, I think, could be ahead of Gio Lopez in this. It's probably not. There's not a lot of degree of separation based on what we've seen, but I could give the nod to Ashton Daniels based on, does Gio Lopez have a Deuce Robinson? Probably not. And that's enough reason for me to give Ashton Daniels a bump above him.
Well, I think it's crazy that Ashton Daniels, I know we're talking about Gio Lopez. I watched Gio Lopez play last year. I watched several UNC games, including their opener. And he was so erratic. He couldn't complete a forward pass. He, you know, could run around, and he was just throwing balls up, hoping somebody would catch him. Oftentimes, it was the other team catching him. Like, this is really just a slap in the face to Florida State. It really is a diss to Florida State that you would assume this kid, who was absolutely atrocious last year under Bill Belichick at North Carolina, is better than Ashton Daniels, who was at Auburn, who actually went toe-to-toe with Alabama last year. Like,
yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's just a complete diss to Florida State.
Yeah, that's the first one I really don't agree with. And now when you look at number 12, it is Ashton Daniels. Again, the writer did assume that Florida State was going to give the job to Ashton Daniels. And I want to elaborate on that in just a minute. But, you know, again, you're talking about Ashton Daniels. We all know the story. Started at Stanford, went to Auburn, now at Florida State, has 37 power four starts. The guy has a ton of experience. As you mentioned, he looked pretty darn good against Alabama last year, lit up. Vanderbilt looked terrible against Kentucky. So there have been flashes of how good he can be. There has also been a lot of documented record from his time at Stanford and the Kentucky game of how bad he can be too.
Correct.
So I can understand him being not in the top 10 of a 17 team conference of this list. That I can't understand because you can, for me, when we talk about Ashton Daniels, I think him being at number 12 is kind of a message, right? First off, Florida State should in no ever in any year in the ACC should Florida State have the 12th best quarterback. Maybe you don't have the first. Maybe you don't have the third because the ACC does have a history of some pretty darn good quarterbacks. You should never have the 12th. Now, as we talked about on a previous show, they said they didn't want to spend. So this is what you get. And it's kind of unfortunate because, you know, when you talk about that, a lot of times that kind of leads to where you're at on the field. You know, we just said this isn't a complete list of how you're going to win games based on your quarterback, but it does matter. And why I say that is because I just went back and pulled some numbers. When you look at Florida State's passing offense in the ACC ranked versus the finish in the ACC, in 2022, they finished third in passing offense, third in the ACC. In 23, they finished third in passing offense, first in the ACC. And I'm pretty sure Jordan Travis would have been top five to top three on that quarterback list, depending on who was playing those years. In 2024, Florida State's passing offense was 17th, and you finished 17th. Last year, Florida State's passing offense was 8th, and you finished 13th in the conference. So, again, man, you can tell how important it is that your passing offense is at least decent. And right now, you brought in a quarterback to run a Gus Malzahn run kind of heavy quarterback system, and now you're putting him in a pass offense. So it's kind of a tough fit for an offense that you didn't bring him in to run from a guy that hasn't proven he can be a great passer. Now, with that being said, I do want to defend Ashton Daniels a little bit here. And that is, in fairness, given the potential of his receivers, because you do have Deuce Robinson, I do think Javon Boggs, we heard so much about him. There's no way that kid's just going to be a dud. I know he dealt with injury and stuff last year, so I'm interested to see him get back. Danzy is a guy who was a track guy, missed springtime, was coming in as a freshman. So, like, you get this kid some actual route running experience, and he's going to take off too. So I think the weapons that Ashton Daniels has around him and the fact that he has the running ability – probably, I would say, almost better than every quarterback on this list because he's run for 800 yards before in the past at Stanford, that I could see him finishing higher than top 10 once you factor all those things in. Because, you know, this is college, man. You have to factor in both sides. Like, as a pure passer, is he probably the 12th best quarterback in the ACC? Sure, I could see that. Maybe even worse. But as a complete package with the weapons that he has, I think that does give him an advantage that a lot of these guys don't. Because, you know, man, in college, like, would Lamar Jackson have won the Heisman if it wasn't for his running ability as well? Like, yes, he's a great passer. But if he didn't have his legs, would he have won the Heisman? Probably not. And so you do have to factor that in. So I think with the unknown and the good and bad history, I could move Ashton Daniels up to about 11th. But that's probably about as high as I would go right now. Now, the last thing I want to say before I kick it back to you is word through camp is that he has looked pretty good, but neither him nor Sperry have separated themselves. Now, we're less than five practices through camp, so it's still very early. But I know they're both learning a new offense. But when you have a redshirt senior who started 37 games versus a redshirt freshman who started zero games, and he can't really – he's not separating himself, that does worry me a little bit about the quarterback situation. And so we'll see how it plays out. Maybe they're just not wanting to say because they want to keep Kevin Sperry very engaged in the spring. But, man, you know, when you have a guy who's, what, 24 career touchdowns to 22 interceptions and a 5-17 record as a starter, it's hard to put him any higher than this on the list, but I do see potential for him to finish higher at the end of the season.
Yeah. I'll be real with you, Jesse. I don't trust anything that's coming out from the whatever the who's, you know, setting themselves apart from camp, who's not. Yep, it's camp. Let's be real. It is going to be Ashton Daniels' job until the earth falls out. Like, we are like 99% sure of that. So the ploy is probably to keep Kevin Sperry, like, you know, kind of mentally in the game there is where I would agree with you in that part. But I'll say this. This is where I actually really disagree with this list, because I get that the kid, the Vizian kid, is at Clemson, but he played one game and they still got their butts whooped. Yeah. How are you going to tell me he's better than a QB who's had 34 starts? Yes, he hasn't been great in all 34 starts, but the dude has power four, if you want to call Stanford power five back when it was, because that's when he was there when it was the power five. Stanford power five, power four starts. Dude played in the SEC, had some really great games, had some really terrible games. But you're going to tell me that a kid who's barely played is better than the kid who's had 34 starts? Like, that's where I'm like, I'm not saying he's top eight, but he definitely ain't 12th in the ACC. Also, the fact of the matter is that he's coming into an offense that's better suited for him. Now, we can talk about whether or not they should have got him. They should have spent the money. All I know is that they hired John Garrett, and this was the first quarterback they, like, you know, they brought in a couple other ones, but this was the one they wanted, and John Garrett was there. So this is on not just Mike Norvell, not just formerly known as Gus Malzahn, but also John Garrett as well. This guy's going to have a better offense to play in, meaning – I think much better than the Gus Malzahn offense, where he was just going to hand it off, run, and make some deep throws. He's going to actually have intermediate passing. I've seen that come out in springtime. Like, there's an intermediate passing game. This is where a Boggs is much better used than in a Gus Malzahn, where it's the deep shot, deep shot, deep shot. Obviously, that's where Deuce thrived in. But for a Danzy, for a Boggs, this is where they're going to actually have a lot more success. So you have the weapons on the outside. You're tall enough to be able to see over it. You're a tank. You run really tough. Like, who's to say that this kid couldn't have a better season? Now, I might be just hyping myself up to believe something that ain't true.
Yeah.
But who's to say that this kid can't have a better season than what is being projected? So 12, that you could miss me with that. I don't think he's top seven, but he ain't 12.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think right now in the preseason, I would probably put him 11th just because his experience has been not the greatest. But I do think, to your point, the Stanford situation was terrible. He had no one around him. It was an offense that wasn't built for him. The time he spent at Auburn, you know, the Kentucky game was his very first start and a new system and all that type of stuff. I think this year, with the resources that he has around him, and the system, and being what, and plus the Kentucky game happened first, and then you saw the good games happen.
Correct.
So he kind of got comfortable in that system, and they tailored a little bit to him. So you'll have all fall camp, assuming he wins the job in the spring, to tailor the offense to what he does. And him and Sperry are so similar that it wasn't like trying to, you know, change from Jackson Arnold to where he was. And so I do think, you know, looking up and down this list, I think he definitely has the opportunity to finish in that top eight range. I think that's pretty fair. I'm not going to put him top five because there's some pretty decent quarterbacks here. You know, the kid at Clemson, I think they're just basing that on. He's a former five-star who's been with the program for a while. So, yeah, I think he could finish top eight, and it's not necessarily where you want to be, but no. When you're not looking at a very heavily quarterback-fueled offense with a good running game and stuff like that, that could get you maybe the over on the wins. I mean, we both expect it to be a somewhat disappointing season.
Right.
But, yeah, I do think this is a little bit disrespectful to Ashton Daniels, but I also understand that boat anchor of a history that he carries around of the 24-22 and the 5-17. That's tough. But I do think he can finish at a minimum of top eight in this conference.
Yeah, and I'll also say, throw back to you really quick, is that I also think this is indicative of what the national media just believes about Florida State, period. And so any player going to Florida State is automatic. It's like, remember when a three-star would commit to Florida State back in the day, they would automatically then get a four-star because it's Florida State. But if they committed to like USF, they would drop a star. This is the same deal. He could actually be a top eight quarterback, but because he went to Florida State and because of, like you said, his previous experience, they're like, this kid's probably not very good because of the history so far with quarterbacks under Mike Norvell.
Yeah, and Travis. It's hard to argue that, right? It's hard to argue against that because it has been what it has been. Like, the results have been what they have been with quarterbacks not named Jordan Travis, to your point. But no, I think it's a bigger picture because if it was Kevin Sperry and not Ashton Daniels, you might even be lower on the list just because you haven't seen a whole lot from him. Now, we've seen a little bit against bad competition to show us that a lot of us think he's very capable if he were to win that job, even though a lot of us don't think that's going to happen. But again, I think the overarching takeaways from this, and we'll kind of fly through the rest of the list to close this section out, is it's a statement again on its own that Florida State is number 12. You're not even in the top 10 in quarterbacks. Right. You wouldn't have been probably in the top 10 the last 2 years either, unfortunately, at least after the season anyway, maybe some preseason hype. But the other big takeaway that I have on this list, man, is you play four out of the top five and seven out of the top 10. It's going to be a tough year for that defense. Like, you're going to have to strap it up and be ready to play. Now, the rest of this list closes out with Walker Egitt at Duke, which this is the unfortunate part for Duke, right? You had the literal number one quarterback on this list. And because you had to scramble at the end of the portal period after it had already closed and your quarterback dipped on you, now you get a San Jose State D2 quarterback who is going to try and fill the shoes of Darian Mensah, the number one on the list. That's the hard part about how that whole exchange happened. Billy Edwards Jr. is coming in from Wake Forest, from Maryland, from Wisconsin, now to UNC. So my man is well-traveled. He is a six-year player. And then at Georgia Tech, you have Alberto Mendoza. Obviously, everybody knows Fernando Mendoza. Yep. Kid doesn't have a lot of experience, but can he be more than just Fernando's little brother? That's the big storyline with him. And, you know, it's going to be a really interesting year to watch Georgia Tech with no Buster Faulkner at OC, no Haynes King at quarterback. This is a complete side note, but this was a really interesting case study this year for their head coach, right? Yep. A lot of people were like, man, I'd love to get Brent Key from Georgia Tech. And I was like, well, let's see what he does this year without Buster Faulkner. Once he has to start replacing those assistants, without Haynes King, who they just, I mean, carried his body off the field every single Saturday. It'll be interesting to see what they do with that.
Is he a Mike Norvell without Jordan Travis?
Exactly. Is he like a one-trick pony? And once that pony leaves the stable, you're done. The next one here, thank goodness, good news for us. Mason McKenzie at Boston College is number 16 on the list. Came over from Saginaw Valley State D2 to Boston College. Threw for around 2,000 yards last year, 17 touchdowns, 11 picks. Did have 942 rush yards and 10 touchdowns. So he's going to be a dual threat guy to watch, but he's making a big leap. You know, they're kind of hoping to get that Trinidad Chambliss effect. But I like to hear that. And then Davis Warren, transfer from Michigan, rounds out the list at number 17 for Stanford. So, man, a lot of quarterbacks on this list that some have proven what they can do. Some are kind of in that hype, not proven range. Then you have some that are trying to outlive a bad history. And, you know, again, man, just to close this section out, I do think Daniels could be a smidge higher to start for the season. I think he has a real good opportunity to finish much higher than where he's at right now with the tools around him, the running ability, and the offense that he'll be in. It's going to be a tough slate facing four of the top five, but man, it's interesting just to see these rankings. Again, they don't mean anything for how the season's actually going to play out, but it is kind of, to your point, interesting to see where the national media how they see how you fit in the conference and where it's at. And for the most important to everyone else, we think O-line is the most important position here at Plant the Spear. But for the most important position on the field, you know, where you stack up in those rankings are probably going to determine a little bit of how your season goes.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, we'll see. We'll see how it plays out. I'll be interested to see at the end of the season to go back to look at that list to see, okay, did these quarterbacks live up to the rankings they were in, or did someone surprise us? Did someone disappoint us? Hopefully, by the end of the season, we're like looking at Asher Daniels like, holy cow, what a diamond in the rough we found there.
Yeah, no one saw that coming. And I think he needs to finish probably somewhere in the top eight for you to hit the over on the wins too.
Correct.
I think you're going to need that. Now, before we move on to the next part, we're going to talk about some ACC Conference Championship winner odds that just dropped very briefly. And then we're going to get into some FSU fan questions. But speaking of being an FSU fan, if you're a Noel fan and you need some new Noel gear, the best place to go is Alumni Hall FSU. Look, these guys have everything that you need from basketball, baseball, football, all the gear year-round, warm stuff, cold stuff, tailgating supplies, everything that you need, they have it. If you're in Tallahassee, the location is 1415 Timber Lane Road. If you're shopping online, just head on over to alumnihall.com, navigate over to the FSU page, and make sure that you use code SPEAR to save 10%. They have Hall Pass rewards, so you can get free rewards whenever you spend money to use on future purchases. They have free shipping over $99. So a lot of really good things going on over there at Alumni Hall FSU. We really appreciate their support, and we really appreciate you guys supporting them. So make sure you check them out and save 10% with code SPEAR. Now, Michael, let's move on to these championship game winner odds. And then fortunately, nothing is sneaking up on Florida State fans to surprise us of where we're at as a program, right? We clearly know where we're at. But this is another one that's kind of a tough medicine that you talked about a few episodes ago. Like, we need a pretty sizable spoonful of sugar to swallow this next pill. And so briefly, we'll just run through them. At number one, you have Miami at -135. And that big gap that I talked about, number two is SMU at +700. So you're going from -135 to +700. And after that, it's Louisville at +1100. So it is – now, this is bucking 22 years of history, because Miami has shown it doesn't matter if they're national championship caliber, they ain't ACC caliber.
They ain't ACC caliber.
They're going to have to buck 20-plus years of history that says they can't. But right now, Vegas thinks, and these are via FanDuel, that Miami is a landslide favorite to win the conference this year. And so I'll throw it back to you on this. Miami is one, SMU is two. I'll stop reading the odds after this because they go into four digits. Louisville, Virginia at four, Clemson at five, Pitt at six, Virginia Tech at seven, NC State comes in at eight, Cal at nine, Georgia Tech is at 10. Again, we just talked about a program that's answering some questions on its own with a new quarterback and a new OC, comes in ahead of you. Florida State is at 11 at +3,500 to win the ACC. That's a painful number. And then Duke is a pretty big fall off after that at 12 at +7,000. Then it goes to Wake, Syracuse, North Carolina, Stanford, and Boston College at +30,000. So at least you get the lowest odds on here, but you also get number one, number two, number three, number four, number five, number six, number eight. So that sounds fun, right? That's a good time.
Great. It's so great to be a +3,500 odds to win the ACC championship when you used to run roughshod through the ACC. Roughshod. You won that conference starting in 1992. I forget what it was, like 10 straight or something like that.
Yeah, I think it was Virginia's 95 win was the first ACC loss. So you went 3 years, basically.
Went 3 years without losing to the ACC competition. You ran that conference. It was FSU like check mark at the end of the year. And now you're +3,500 to win the conference. I mean, what else is there to say to that?
It's a tough pill to swallow, and it's also tough knowing that you basically get to play, like, I know you lost to Stanford last year. Lord knows there's no guarantee you're going to beat them. But, you know, this year you look at the bottom five, no Duke, no Wake, no Syracuse, no North Carolina, no Stanford, only Boston College. So it's going to be hard this year. It's going to be pretty hard this year. So now that was just a quick one just because we wanted to follow up on that from the one episode we did with the win totals. But the next section we're going to move into is some questions from the FSU fan base. Now, there's not a whole lot going on out here, so we're digging for all the content we can find. And so we found some fun questions on a credentialed message board, I'll be honest, where we found them. And so these are not our listener questions, but these were asked in their board. And so we thought it'd be fun for us to probably answer some of these. We're going to look at doing some listener Q&As in the future during the summer when we have some downtime. If you guys are interested in that, let us know in the comments if you're watching on YouTube, and we'll figure out a way to facilitate that. But these are about 6-8 questions that we're going to go through, answer relatively fast, that we saw in that thread that we thought would be fun. And so, Michael, let's start with, let's just go straight for the big one right out of the gate, right? Do you think Mike Norvell needs to win at least 7 games to keep his job? I'll start. I think this is a really complicated answer.
Yes,
because
it is.
On the surface, I would say without a doubt, without a doubt. The one thing that's eating at the back of my collar here that's saying I don't know is, this is another tough pill to swallow. Bowl eligibility happens at 6-6.
Yep.
And so if you get to 6-6 and he has not been fired in the middle of the season for things starting off so poorly that he didn't make it to the end of the season, if he goes 6-6 and they don't fire him after the buzzer of the Florida State or the Florida game, and maybe he gets that 7th win in the bowl game, I think that's a situation they're going to justify to keep him because of the cost and everything that we've talked about in past episodes where they've spent all this money on the facilities. They painted themselves into a financial corner. So I think if he goes 6-6, he should be fired. Do I think it's going to happen? I don't think so. I think if he makes a bowl game and picks up that 7th win in the bowl, it may not even matter at that point. I think he's going to stay. If I were the administration, it should be 8 games. It should be 8. It should not be 7. But at least 7 to keep his job, I think yes. I think it should be the answer. I don't think it is the answer, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think if you're the FSU, if I'm asking this question as the FSU administrator, I would say yes. If he wins 7 games, he's going to keep his job because that's what they've shown us. Well, they've shown us that if he wins 5 games, he'll keep his job. They've shown us if he wins 2 games, he'll keep his job, right? Yep. Because he has that big fat contract that makes it really hard for them to part ways with him. But I would say the answer to that is yes. If you win 7 games, he's going to keep his job. And I feel about 95% confident of that. On the other side, really quick, do I think he should keep his job if he wins 7 games? No. I think the standard should be 9 games. Like, for me, if you didn't win 9 games this year, you're fired. I don't care if you won 8 games. You're fired because it's been mediocre. But yes, if he wins 7 games, will he keep his job? I think so.
So I'm going to come up with my own question to follow you up on this one. Do you think if he wins 5 games and misses a bowl, do they fire him? I think yes. I think it actually will happen if they miss a bowl for a 3rd consecutive year. I think they'll do it. I know there's a lot of people, because we talked about this on a panel show I did with the Rock and Roll channel. There was a few people on there that said, no, I just don't think they're in a position to fire him right now. I think 6-6 is the most painful mark you can reach because it was not good, it was not bad, it was just mediocre, and it probably gets him another year because he made a bowl. 5-7, I do think he will get fired.
I think it depends on, I know.
And how it looks is important.
I would love to say yes, but I really think, again, he got to Florida with a chance to get bowl eligible. I think if the same scenario is there again, he will make it through the whole season, and if he's at 5-6, with a chance to win at Florida. No, the game's at Tallahassee.
Yep.
So if he has a chance to win the game in Tallahassee against Florida, then no, I don't think he will. If he doesn't win that game, then I think it's a coin flip. I don't trust this administration to pull the trigger because of the financial situation of his contract.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think
the only way I think that they would pull it immediately is if, like, it's guaranteed he's already lost 8 games. It's not going to happen. I think 4-8 is like, and that's terrible, but I think 4-8 has to be the thing for him to get fired, or it has to be a disastrous 5-7.
Yeah. I was going to say, I could see it being 5-7. If, like, you got, you know, lost by 20 to Bama, 20 to SMU. And honestly, I think at that point it would be so bad that you would know it was so bad that I think he gets fired the bye week after Miami.
Yeah.
I think that would have to be the case. Right. We'll see, man. That's a tough one. That's the $50 million question on every FSU fan's mind right now. Now, this next one is tough because I don't want to answer this question, but we're going to do it anyway. Does FSU beat these teams this year? Clemson, Miami, Bama, or Florida? And this is going to be painful, man, because I'm going to say, let's start with the least likely. I'm going to say Miami, no. You have to play on the road. Bama, I'm also going to say no. It's painful to say that because I know you snuck up on them and dominated them this year, you know, in Tallahassee. But you're just going back to, it's a trust factor with the staff. And while I do think they will end the winless streak on the road this year, they haven't won a road game in 2 years. And that includes a team like Stanford. So you're expecting them to go beat Miami on the road and Alabama on the road? I'm going to say no to that. Now, I'm going to be a little bit on the rosy side. Does FSU beat Clemson or Florida? Right now, if I had to put my money on it, I would say no. But I do think with Clemson coming to town with a lot of new stuff and a lot of pressure on Dabo, that's a winnable game. I also think Florida, they still got Jaden Baugh, which always makes you nervous because that kid is still running against Florida State's defense right now. But with a maybe less, I know Lagway wasn't good there, but with a less defined quarterback situation, I like the staff that they built, but a new coach and coming to your place, I think that's a winnable game too. You know, they're still only at 7.5 wins projection, and it's not the schedule that they had the last 2 years. So Miami and Bama, I'm out on. Clemson and Florida, I think you have a possibility. It's too early to call because I have to look into those teams a little bit more. I think you have a shot in those two games being at home. I mean, Florida State was 5-2 at home last year. The road games, I'm not going to put my money on that.
Yeah, here's what I'll say. If you take away 2024, so the 2-10 season, okay, take away that season. Every year under Mike Norvell, FSU has gotten a win they had no business winning, right? You go back to the 2020 year, they beat UNC. Yep. I think they were ranked number 5. You go back to 2021, they beat UNC again. Yeah.
Can we get UNC on the schedule?
Right? They beat Miami 4th-14, right?
Yep.
You go to 2022, they beat Florida at home in that crazy Jordan Travis game, right? You go to 2023. Well, they were really good in 2023.
Yeah. Even beating the crap out of LSU. No one saw that coming.
Yeah, no one saw that coming. Right. Obviously, you take out 2020, you take out 2024, 2025. I mean, you and I were there. We have grass somewhere in our house to prove it. Like, we stormed the field against
Alabama.
Or maybe
we don't. I don't know. Maybe we don't.
Sorry. I was just kidding, guys. But every year except for 2024, they have a win. They had no business winning. So I'm not going to say they're going to go 0-4. I just don't know which one it's going to be. But I believe it's going to be one of those four. Clemson, Florida, Alabama, or Miami. One of them they're going to get. And I just don't know which one. It'll likely, like you said, most likely be the one at home. Whatever. So Florida at home or Clemson at home. But they're going to be one of them. And I just don't know which one. Yeah. But yeah, I think they go 1-4.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I would take the home games as the most likely. Obviously, Clemson's got a lot of questions, and so does Florida. Miami and Alabama, they're just firing right now, and it seems hard. Bama's not so much firing. They got a lot to replace. So I'm not saying that game can't happen either, right?
But it's Bryant Denny.
It's Bryant Denny, and we've struggled on the road. Now, my guy Ralph, Spartan071, said that he thinks that's going to be their first road win to snap the streak. So I hope he's right.
I love it. I'm not storming that field.
Exactly. Now, the next question here, this kind of goes to that second tier level of teams, not those teams that are, you know, typically powerhouses. What record do you think FSU will go against these teams? SMU, UVA, Pitt, and Louisville. So kind of that second tier ACC team and games that you really, you know, we talked about this in the season win totals episode, right? You need to win the games that are pretty darn close to you in win projection. Yes. And that's what these were. SMU's the only one that was, I think, 2 wins above where you were at. And you get 2 of the 4 at home. So to me, I do think you beat Virginia this year at your place. I do think that happens. SMU is so tough, man. Yeah. Like, I like that you get New Mexico State before them and they don't get anybody in week zero. So I think you get that advantage. SMU does kind of start slow as a program. They have the last couple of years, and you get them at home. And to me, that's the most important game of the season because that's a tone setter. If you come out and get whipped after New Mexico State against SMU going into Alabama, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Pitt game is tough because it's on the road on a short week. And then Louisville is the same situation. Mm-hmm. So to me, I'm going to go 2-2 in those four.
Yeah, I'm going to go 2-2 because here's the thing. FSU gets screwed every year when we have to play on a short week. We're never good. Our record on short weeks, we've done this in other episodes. It's asinine how frustratingly we have to play on a Friday night in the ACC. So I'm going to go 2-2 on this.
Yeah, I'll do that too. And That might actually be better than maybe you could think, right?
Yep.
Getting two of those it would be pretty decent. Now, well, in this lens, let's not say that. The next one here, this is an interesting one now. Buy or sell, FSU wins two road games this year. Ooh. Now, that would be two more than they won in the last 2 years, as they are currently 0-10 in games outside of Doak Campbell Stadium. And, you know, again, man, when we get back to it, you got Alabama on the road. You have Miami on the road. You have Louisville on the road. You have Pitt and BC on the road. You have some really, really tough games on the road here. I am going to give you the Boston College win. I think you do. I'll say this. I do think you're going to snap the streak of not being able to win a road game. I think, and I wrote about this in something that I can't remember if I published it or if it's one of the article I'm working on right now, but I wrote something in one of my recent articles where I said, listen, at the end of the day, Florida State might be 1-14 in road games over the last 3 years, but they cannot be 0-15.
Correct.
So I'm going to go with they are going to win a road game this year. I'm not going to go with they win two. I think they go 1-4 on the road because – again, the road games you're asking them to win is going to be at Miami, at Bama, at Pitt, or at Louisville. And I just don't feel confident because the two that I feel confident you could win, Pitt and Louisville, are on short weeks.
Yep. Yep. Jesse, I'm going to break your heart. FSU is going to go 3 years without winning a road game.
Oh, come on. Give me the Boston College game at least.
I can't because I could have gave you the Stanford game.
That's true. You make a good point.
I could have gave you the Stanford game. We were literally a terrible call from winning that road game, but they lost it. We were literally a doink punt from winning at NC State. They lost it. They're not winning at Alabama. They're not winning at Clemson. I'm sorry, at Miami. They don't win on the road on short weeks. That's just historically. That's Bobby. That's Jimbo. That's Willie. That's just historically.
This program.
Yeah, it's just this program. They struggle with that. Obviously, Virginia last year, short week, on the road, ridiculous. You were there. You didn't get the storm the field, but you were there. I'm sorry. Until I see it, I cannot predict that they're going to win a road game. It's going to be 3 years since FSU won a road game at the end of the next season.
Not only is that tough, that alone is a fireable offense.
But absolutely.
I do think we finished the year with 1-14 in the road game column after the last 3 years. So I think they get one. Okay. I would not bet that they get two. Mm. The next one here. Do you think the defense will be the biggest weakness on this team this year? How about the D-line? I'm going to answer this quickly in two parts.
Okay.
I think the defense will be weaker than the offense from a simple standpoint of – one, they have more star power on the offense from a guy like Deuce, a guy like Trey Wisner, and all that stuff. Two, you also don't need the depth that you need on offense that you need on defense, and that's my biggest concern about the defense. So in that mindset, do I think the defense will be the weakest link on this team this year? Maybe not special teams, hopefully. Special teams was by far the weakest link last year. But – aside from special teams, when you just talk about offense and defense, yes, I do think defense will be the weaker arm versus the offense. But again, I think a lot of it's to do with the star power and the depth. But the second part of what I was going to say is I do think the defense will be a little bit better than it was last year. So I think it will get better. I just don't think it will be better than the offense because of the couple of star power pieces and the depth. Is the difference there. And how about the D-line? That's my main concern. I mean, coming into the season, by far, that is my main concern. I think they got some nice pieces, but is it championship caliber? I don't think so. And that is my biggest concern on the defense, is the defensive line.
Yes, I would agree with you. I think the defense is going to be what's going to lead the team is going to be the offense. They're going to have to win games more with the offense than they win games more with the defense. That doesn't mean I think the defense is going to be weak. It just means that I think, like you said, there's more star power. Mike Norvell's back to the play calling. He's got stars around him. If they can unlock the Ashton Daniels piece of it, this offense is going to take them places, probably to seven, maybe wins, right? The defense, however, is going to have to try to keep them in the game while the offense wins the game. That's all that's different. Normally, you have defenses that win the game while the offense keeps you in the game. It's just going to be vice versa this year. And I think the D-line is the reason why I feel that way. I feel like you got, like you said, quality pieces. You don't have enough depth. And so they have to develop depth in the spring and going in the fall camp so that they can actually sustain the pass rush, the stopping the run. Obviously, you're going to have to use a lot of the linebackers this year. So the offense is going to have to win you games while the defense keeps you in games.
That's a really good way to put it. I mean, the offense might lead you to Shreveport.
Right.
Or Shreveport for the Independence Bowl. But the defense needs to make sure the ticket gets punched.
Correct.
So, yeah, I think that's a great way to answer that. Now, the next one here, we'll do kind of rapid fire with these last two. Buy or sell? Mike Norvell will still be the head coach at FSU in 2031. Basically, he's going to finish out his contract.
Sale.
I'm sell. I'm hitting that button 100 times, buddy. We are hitting the stop loss on that. I am selling that tough. If we do, I don't even want to know what the state of this program would be at 2031 if he was still here that long. Because you're talking about, what, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, and 31. Six more seasons. No, I'll say this. I think he might be the coach in 27.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to make it to 2031. So I'm selling that pretty hard.
Yeah, sell. Absolutely. That's all I have to say. Sell.
Fair enough. Okay. The last one, we've talked about this last summer, I think, when conference realignment was a big thing. This was just one of the last questions I thought would be a quick, fun one to ask here. What conference would you like to see FSU in once they leave the ACC? And I will give you my quick answer in two parts. One, if you're asking about the holistic picture for the university, for the money, for the academics, for everything, I am going to tell you straight up, I understand the Big Ten is better. And I think that is a better situation for Florida State to be in. You kind of get to go the Fox route, not ESPN. I understand all of that. If it was up to me, it would be the SEC. Why do I say that? Because I love football and I love watching football at the highest level. And I understand that the Big Ten has won the national title the last 3 years. I get that. And the SEC may be kind of finding itself and I think is overhyped as a football conference. But at the end of the day, I love going to games. I love tailgating. I love having tailgating events with my Florida State friends and family. And that's going to be really hard to do at a Big Ten game, where I think my closest would be Ohio State, unless they brought like Clemson or somebody. Whereas I think there are five or six SEC stadiums within a day's drive of me. So just for geographical reasons and the fact that I love to tailgate at games in person, give me the SEC.
Yes. Yes. I get that the Big Ten from a prestigious academic and obviously money wise, they're leading the charge right now, but the SEC is very close. And for us football junkies, the SEC is where, honestly, it is the best football. Like, I mean, yeah. I'm not saying that the Big Ten, they've won the last, three, national championships. They're the best conference of football, top-end conference of football right now. But the SEC just has the best football, has the best game day environments. Like how – we've talked about this. I would love to see FSU at LSU, Death Valley, night game. I'd love to see – I live in Texas now, which is crazy. You guys didn't know that, but I moved to Texas, right?
Surprise.
Surprise. Right. I would love to be able to go to DK Royal Stadium and watch FSU play. I'd love to drive over to Oklahoma and see FSU play there again, hopefully finally get a win in Gaylord, whatever that – stadium's called right?
Yeah, or the 12th man or whatever.
The 12th man. Like, yeah, I could drive. All those games are within driving distance.
Yep.
If they go to the Big Ten, the closest game to me is Ohio State, I believe.
You might even be closer to Southern California.
That's cool. Oh, you're right. I forgot about that.
Who should be the Big Ten anyways?
It's so weird.
Yeah.
So, like, that's what I'm saying. So, honestly, I would love for them to be in the SEC.
Yeah, the biggest benefit of the ACC to me, living in the Charlotte, North Carolina area, is there are, a handful of ACC teams within a stone's throw of me. But the problem is, this year, we don't play any of them. The closest away game for me is actually in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Yeah. So, yeah, I would pick the SEC probably 10 every day And twice on Sundays, just because of the environment, the fun, the Grove and all that type of stuff, man. It's just so much fun. But if you have an answer to those questions that you want to share and you're watching on YouTube, drop it in the comments. I would love to hear you guys' thoughts on that. And Michael, let's close this thing out with some baseball talk here. As we know, the Noles, last time we talked, we had not covered the NC State Series win, which was a massive statement win for them. I mean, you're coming off a Wake Forest series that you won against a ranked team. Now, Wake Forest is no longer ranked. They did lose the series, but they won one out of the three games against Virginia last weekend. And Virginia's a top 10 team, so that's no crying shame over that. They did at least win one of those games, but they did lose the series. And so, you know, when you were coming off that Wake series, you were kind of like, well, how good is this team? Was that for real? How good is Wake? They really haven't played anybody. And then you go play NC State, who was another top 10. Well, Wake was 12. They were top 10 at the time. They really hadn't played a whole lot of tough teams yet either. NC State hadn't. And you lost the first game, so you were like, uh-oh, this is a little bit concerning.
Yeah.
Then you get a good win in the second game, and you run rule them in the third game and get a dominating win. And, man, I mean, it was – the offense was there. The pitching was kind of struggled a little bit on Friday and Saturday. I think really the one to talk about in this was Bryson Moore had probably the best outing of the three, which was really good to see because you were kind of worried about where he was at. And so, man, it was a massive statement win for them to get that series over NC State in the fashion that they did. And really, it puts you kind of in the driver's seat of the ACC. And now, of course, this weekend you have Duke coming to town, who they might not be ranked, but Duke is always a pretty tough program when it comes to baseball. They're always pretty darn good. And so you have another opportunity. You know, when it comes to baseball, you want to see sweeps. But as long as you get the series win, you know, if you can get that series win this weekend against Duke, it's just, again, it's going to put you in a really good position as you're starting to find your footing, as you're going through ACC play. But the elephant in the room is this daggone Florida series that, first off, daggone it, Michael, I'm about to go on a hunger strike until we move this damn thing to a weekend series because I'm tired of it. I'm tired of this midweek crap that we call a series. Look, I know it might be a little bit more spread out, but living in the Carolinas, I know Clemson and Carolina. They do a three-game weekend series with split locations. They do Clemson, neutral site in Columbia, and then at USC Columbia. Can we not do that in a weekend? Could we not start, you know, maybe Tallahassee on Friday, then do Gainesville and Jacksonville on Saturday, Sunday, something like that? That's my first soapbox gripe. But the biggest thing that just puzzles me about this team, man, is you had the offensive performance that you do against NC State, and then you come back against Florida. The first game, you struck out 18 times. This game, you strike out 13 times and get shut out. And, you know, typically we go in midweeks. Midweeks don't matter, right? Because it's where you kind of test things out. A lot of that is because of the pitching. It's still mostly the same bats that are in the same lineup, and technically you're facing worse pitching because it's not their weekend starters. And for some reason, they have Nolan Ryan as their midweek starter. I don't understand it because we cannot hit Florida's midweek starter. So, man, again, you know, to Jimbo's credit, the man, for whatever he did or didn't, he could handle the rivals. So maybe he needs to give Link a little pep talk about how much this Florida game and that Miami series means. So to close out my thoughts on this, man, great series win over NC State. That's exactly what you needed to see when the lights were on and it really mattered the most. Really disappointing to now you have lost the midweek series against Florida, and it would be nice for you to avoid getting swept when you get them in Tallahassee in a couple weeks to at least get game three. And then you need to capitalize on that Duke series this weekend. But yeah, man, you got to move that Florida series to a weekend. And then the last thing I'll say that frustrates me to no end, man, is like, is Florida's midweek starter really better than NC State and Wake's weekend starters? And how come we can't get one of those? I mean, like, we're a pretty darn good baseball school, and it seems like we're struggling to fill the bullpen with consistent arms. Midweek is a complete just whatever's left, kind of left over, do your best you can. And then meanwhile, you know, they got Randy Johnson coming out here on a Tuesday night, and it's frustrating to say the least. But again, I can't argue with them sweeping Wake and then beating NC State. So, I mean, they're off to a good start. It's just, man, that Florida series means a lot to us as the fans. And so it would be nice to at least get game three and not get swept in a couple weeks.
Right. Yeah. Listen, kudos to the baseball team. Love that Wake Forest sweep. That was beautiful. Gosh, we were really worried coming off of striking out 18 times against Florida, what they were going to look like. They came out, they dominated that series. then, you know, they handle the midweek series. Then they do a really good job. Then they get into, you know, that first game against NC State. They get beat. You know, you see some of the bullpen concerns that we have. You and I are talking our text thread of like, okay, oh no, this might be the thing that exposes us. And then they come back the next two. They dominate. You're like, all right, okay, this is going to be a good team.
Yeah,
but for some dadgum reason, like you said, Nolan Ryan, Randy Johnson, Chris Sales, freaking Beckett, the dude from the Marlins way back when, Babe Ruth comes out of the Florida right. pen, and they're throwing 98, 99 at us on the midweek, and we can't touch them. We can't touch them. It makes no sense whatsoever to me. I don't understand this team. Either they don't care about this rivalry, which – Link, that's kind of a mistake, or
yeah,
they just Florida just geeks up. Florida just got swept by Alabama, and then they come and blow us out, which makes no sense. Now Florida is 20-6, so I don't think this is gonna hurt your NCAA, you know, however that works out with the baseball metrics, whatever. But it just doesn't look great. Obviously, they've won the series this year. I'm with you. I don't know if a hunger strike is going to change their mind, but I might go stand on the street corner with a bunch of signs. I might blare the war chant or something until they figure out how to get this back to a weekend series. You do have Duke coming in starting tonight at 5 p.m. I think you got to win that series. Honestly, if you can get a sweep, even better. That kind of takes the bad taste out of your mouth there. Duke is 17-10, but like you said, they play you really hard. They're a decent baseball team. So you want to go in there. You want to take care of business. You don't want to mess around with them and get back on the winning column.
Yeah, and it's going to be fun. Friday night, the Chiefs should be there. And so yep. It's going to be a great environment. But, yeah, man, I mean, you know, my biggest thing is with this Florida, I'm not going to say that they don't take it serious, but they just don't ever seem to be, like, mm-mm. up for it like mm-mm. they should. And so
it's a rivalry game.
Right. It's just – I don't know. It's a head scratcher, man. But, you know, the good news is, to your point, let me say this first. The good news is they were ranked and it was a midweek. And you don't really get punished for midweeks in college baseball. So it's probably not going to take much wind out of your sails, especially if you can beat them in game three in a couple weeks at your place. But the bad news for Duke and the good news for Florida State fans is last time we lost to Florida, it was BTA to North Carolina State. So, Duke, I feel sorry for you guys this weekend because we just lost to Florida again. So, y'all are getting swept by 3-run rule victories in a row. At least that's what I hope for. But, yeah, man, I mean, you got Duke this weekend, and you hope they look good because you got at Virginia another top 10 test coming up the weekend after that. So, man, it's going to be – and Georgia Tech top 5 team coming up after that. So, it's only getting tougher. So, you want to see this team continue to click, and hopefully it's just an aberration of things that happen in the midweeks that don't make any sense when we play Florida. But that's going to be it for today, guys. We've got some football talk in. We got some baseball talk in. We just wanted to cover as much as we could for you guys because we know, like Michael said, it is basically – the Wild West out there with tumbleweeds going flying around on the news cycle because there's just not a whole lot going on. Basketball's finished, baseball's doing their thing, softball's doing their thing, and football's just kind of quiet on the home front. So we're going to keep finding some things to talk about for you guys. We have some more shows planned coming up that we will get rolled out for you guys. Also, again, if you're enjoying this content, as always, I just ask you very politely to hit that like and subscribe button on YouTube. If you think you're subscribed, maybe you're not. Just double check and make sure that you are. About half or more of our viewers are not subscribed. It really does help the channel. We're really trying to push for that 3,000 subscriber mark by the time the season gets here. If you're listening on podcast version, give us a rate and review. Would help us reach other Noel fans as well. Also, again, I know I keep teasing it to you guys, but you know, we do have some really cool things that we're working on here to kind of reinvent Plant the Spear. We got a lot of exciting things coming up. Some of them are already being rolled out now. A lot of that, hopefully in the next couple months, I'll be able to tell you guys about that as well. So if it's a little quiet on our end, it's just because we're busy working. So make sure you guys lock in with us now because that's going to be exciting. I can't wait to share the news with you guys. So with that being said, Michael, we will call it here. That's going to do it for this one. Thanks for watching, guys. As always, Go Noles.